Okay, so I am Neil Wilkins, and I'm one of the founders of the Mindful Collective. And I'm joined today by Charles Nixon, who is the founder and chairman of Cambridge Marketing College. And Cambridge Marketing College, or as we'll probably call them through this conversation, CMC, just for brevity and clarity, is certainly one of our very, very first partners, and we're very grateful to Charles and all his colleagues for the support that they're giving to the Mindful Collective in terms of sharing really good content and really being part of an ongoing debate about mindfulness in business. Now, I know one of the things that Charles and I have talked about, certainly in recent weeks, because it's becoming more and more of an opportunity, but also more and more of a debate, I think, within sort of ethical and sustainable business circles, is really the concept of mindful profit. And so sort of through this conversation, we're going to explore some of the thinking, some of the latest trends, and some of the opportunities probably for you as a business person that this is actually presenting. So I guess my first question, and we'll see sort of Charles's response on this one, comes back to the kind of age-old tradition, really, of organisations, particularly larger ones, having a CSR policy or statement or vision. And by CSR, we mean corporate social responsibility. And I think my challenge, really, across most organisations is that potentially this is a marketing ploy, a marketing tool, which comes often with very little evidence of actually making difference. And I'd be really interested, Charles, in your view of CSR and really how it's been used in organisations that you've encountered.
Well, it's an interesting one because it goes across considerable spectrum. There are obviously those cases where one would see things like greenwashing occurring, which is basically organisations attempting to seem to be more environmentally friendly than they actually are, or carrying out an approach which says that their product is perhaps more environmentally friendly than it actually is. The examples of General Motors in the past might have been an example that one would have seen as a case study. Generally, CSR, I think, has not been mainstream very many organizations. There's a part of that that they understand and have come from a mindset, to quote Milton Friedman, that the business of business is business, and the result of which is it is what they're tasked with, which is to improve shareholder value, to improve the profitability and turnover, market penetration, whatever their particular tasks are, but are basically financial, and as a result of which, you know, CSR is a sideline. I think that may well be changing, but not from the point of view of CSR. CSR, I think, still is an interesting add-on for most corporations. But from the point of view of organizations such as the ones that hopefully are taking the mindfulness approach, are seeing that as being a central part of their activity as a natural to the marketing or the business development mix. Whereas CSR, I think, historically speaking, has been seen very much as a sideline. Companies that sponsor, certainly in the arts, is corporate sponsors, I think, now account for only about 20% of sponsorship of the arts. The rest of that is individual donations, and that given through trusts. That in itself probably brings out some of the aspects where corporations who have powerful personalities in their sponsorship of activities through their power as CEOs or indeed as founders will have attempted to bring about a philanthropic approach and perhaps have set up a foundation, whether it's corporate or individual, to pioneer some of the aspects that we would now call as being a mindfulness approach, whether that happens to be through things like the Bill Gates Foundation or others.
Now, that's really interesting because certainly it's something that we've been exploring as a non-profit organisation. Obviously, you know, we come at this from a very kind of open, objective perspective, you know, where we're not necessarily looking for any kind of like financial gain as a result of sort of engaging with organisations like that. And I think it's quite interesting from our perspective, and one of the points that you raised there about kind of where the kind of initial impetus is generated from. So are you saying sort of with those examples that this kind of transition from CSR into being a mindful business needs to come from the top down? So is this kind of going to be initiated, if you like, at a board level, do you feel?
Yes, I think it's got to, because if you start off with a commercial company, then its executive officers are tasked with commercial goals, whether that's by stakeholders or shareholders. And those goals have got to be changed, because that's the motivation that those organizations have. Now, you could see to some degree that the approach of, say, Unilever, which is to be much more mindful in the activity that it has put forward, put an ethical aspect on many of its products, which has had an impact on its share performance, and has come from the CEO and the CMO accepting a different approach in business. But elsewhere, for the large scale impact that we're talking about, it probably is for organizations which are family run or still majoritively controlled by their originators.
Mm. Yeah, that's quite interesting. And I think certainly what we're experiencing, and I think you're sort of agreeing with this, that we're seeing quite a big difference really between the larger organizations, where it is very much driven by top down, and potentially sort of medium to much smaller ventures, where there's an opportunity for kind of like grassroots impetus to kind of grow, and then maybe sponsored at a higher level, but where the general sort of staff, if you like, are sort of building that momentum locally. And then it becomes a way of sort of operationally doing business that, as you say, you know, potentially in the future, you know, impacts on things like share price if they're listed, but certainly can impact sort of in terms of profitability. I mean, we've seen an example in recent days where Boston Tea Party, who are one of Mindful Collective's other partners, have just reported a significant drop in profits and actually in revenue as a direct result. And they're saying that this is a direct result of their banning of single-use coffee cups, for example. So they're really, and they're saying actually that they've taken this as part of a planning exercise. So they foresaw that this was going to be happening, but they've taken the hit financially because they believe in the longer term, the return to the planet and probably the return to their overall value in the longer term is greater than the short term gains of, you know, instant profit. So I'd be interested in your view about that kind of long term, short term thing, because, you know, this probably is a longer term investment for most organizations, isn't it?
Certainly, if you're talking about commercial companies which are listed on stock markets, the pressure for short termism is considerable. And many of the ills of the world are laid on the idea of short-term approaches to business development. The aspect, I think you're quite right, is that companies will respond to movements in the marketplace if they think that they are going to be commercially advantageous or limit the downside. So, for example, you know, the constant pressure from activists for pension funds to delist fossil fuel companies has been around for some time and perhaps will have some impact on the organizations such as Shell or what have you. But on the other hand, the commercial requirement of those companies will be that they still need to maintain large amounts of cash generation through their existing business as they develop new businesses in renewables, and Shell's declared aim of becoming, you know, a major renewables company, similarly to BP, is to be lauded. But they still have to serve short-term quite stakeholders who in themselves have to pay out for. So the financial setup is not easily one that can evolve in a quick nature, as you would if you have a smaller organization that can, as you say, for the Boston Tea Party, decide to take the hit straight on the nose for the greater good. I think many organizations who are at the SME level can take that approach. Sometimes it is to forego things that they haven't got and would have perhaps in the future, but it would now be delayed instead of it being something that they might achieve a turnover of X millions in the next 5 years. It might now be in the next 7 years. And that for the senior management team, which will probably include owners, is acceptable. That isn't as easily acceptable for an existing company which is ongoing, you've got hundreds of thousands of employees, that it still needs to pay and returns that it needs to yield for the people who have invested in it for the good of their pensions. So it is a balance, and the commercial balance is one that will continue to drive business attitudes to things such as CSR and indeed mindfulness for quite a while to come. The ground roots or the grassroots will perhaps grow quicker as we see innovation coming from the smaller innovative companies in the marketplace.
Yes, it's quite an interesting one, isn't it? I mean, I guess if you lived in a sort of a perfect world, a perfect environment, this kind of higher purpose, greater good, you know, saving the planet, and having that as an ethos which kind of supersedes, you know, any of the previous kind of financial goals an organization might have, would be a wonderful kind of, you know, thing to sort of envisage and, you know, vision up for the future. But obviously the hard commercial realities for a lot of organizations, particularly in uncertain times, are very much financial. It's survival. And I think to be putting something onto the organization, particularly in a very competitive market where there are expectations to, you know, be delivering everything at a good, fair price, and then to be loading on further commitment requirements for resources of people or management's time or, you know, financial investment is probably quite a tough pill to swallow. And for me, it kind of raises the question, I think, about, you know, certainly from a marketing perspective, we've often seen organizations say, you know, the textbooks often say that, you know, you should be reinvesting sort of, I don't know, 10% of your revenues or your profits back into kind of marketing initiatives. I wonder if there's any kind of sort of benchmark that would be useful for a whole variety of different size of organizations in the whole kind of mindful business approach. Do you think there would be a certain sort of minimum standard or minimum level of resources required to do this kind of activity?
I'm always very wary of setting benchmarks because certain circumstances may yield one figure, but the circumstances will change the next day, the next month, and certainly by different marketplaces. The change, I think, Neil, is likely to come from the more innovative companies who are able to put mindfulness in part of their armory, which is essentially, this is my differentiation. The reason why you buy from me is because I'm going to make sure I do no harm, I give back in the right sort of ways, and I'm taking a reasonable level of profit, and in doing so, I take the customer with me and I educate the customer in the processes that I've gone through in order to produce, let us say, an ethical product. Mm. I would see that there are many organizations out there who have that ability. And it is the innovation that those organizations bring to the marketplace which will drive the pace at which change will happen. Large corporations can exist and will go on existing, even if they ossify, until change is brought about by competition. We are still a competitive society in terms of economics, the result of which is that you can continue to have huge takeovers, large amounts of profit taking and asset stripping or whatever that you have within large branding, because they can take the heart out of a brand and no one will notice until someone else comes along and says, here's a better version. So you see the constant discussion about people like Heinz and Kraft having reduced the amount of cost in there, but the share price is now sluggish. People's demand for the product is lower than it was before. And people are responding by going for more ethical ketchups, more ethical baked beans, whatever it happens to be. But basically, there is a divergence of people just buying the same brand off the shelf without thinking. And I think the whole process in every marketplace is that people have got to be disrupted in their thinking as to what it is they buy. And that comes about by mindful companies going out there and banging the drum in different ways to say, actually, the way is not. And you should come and look at what we have. That will then make the response from large corporations quicker. Those large corporations will be essential to get a change in the way in which the world consumes its resources, because they still consume the vast majority of them. But they will respond to the perceptual changes in the marketplace. And that, I think, is what the use of mindful profit is best given to. Creating more innovation, investing back in new enterprises, new ideas, new ventures, whether it be charitable or just consciousness raising. These are the things that I think are most important that mindful companies should do with their reinvestment of their profits.
That's a really, really good summary. And, you know, thank you for being so clear the way you described that. And I think, you know, for me, that kind of really sort of opens up a huge opportunity, I think, for anybody who is engaging with the Mindful Collective and looking for opportunities within their own organization. And I think what Charles is really summarizing here is the fact that it is about listening and being very aware both of customer expectations and opportunities that come through, you know, customer feedback and the like, but also be looking at the competition, and also be looking at sort of others in and around your sector. So they may well be supplying your organization, or they may well be further down your value chain, because there'll be opportunities in there for you to dovetail the innovations that Charles talks about within your own organization. So I think it's a lot about listening. It's certainly a lot about sharing. And what I'd like to encourage anybody who's seen some good examples of mindful reinvestment or of this transition between what might be termed the CSR approach in the past into this kind of new mindful, ethical, sustainable new business model. If you do have any good examples that you'd like to share, please do so on the mindfulcollective.net website. We'd be really, really grateful for good case studies, good examples. We can come in and talk to you if you've just got a good idea and you've got an example, but you don't have the time to actually, you know, create the materials. We can come in and actually sort of create that with you and for you. So thank you very much for your time today, Charles. It's been really very helpful, very enlightening. And I'm sure, as all of us, you know, we're all on this this journey together, learning and innovating and evolving. So I've no doubt at all that we'll be speaking very soon about some of the really good examples that we're actually seeing in this area. So thank you very much, Charles, for your time today.
Thank you. Goodbye.